In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Cassis does it again!
Again!
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over!
The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Welcome back to Playtesting. It is episode 103. If you're listening on drop day, it is July 26th. This is the official podcast of picking a lane and sticking to it and staying in your lane, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Before we get going, hit the subscribe button, rate five stars wherever you're listening, Apple, Spotify, Odyssey app. Check us out on YouTube on the WEI page. We've got a Playtesting playlist within that. So thumbs up on those videos. We really appreciate it when you guys do that. And follow us on the socials at Playtesi on both Twitter and Instagram. Here with Sammy. Here with Joe, who's in for Pat today. And guess what, guys? If drop day is Friday, which means that we are Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, 4 days away from deadline day. Just four games. You got three with the Yankees starting tonight. And then you got one with the Mariners. But guess what? These games don't matter quite as much as they once did because Craig Breslow declared them buyers. To me, when you get to the deadline or when you approach the deadline, those games matter if you're on the fringe because you got to convince management that you're worth investing in, and they obviously up until this point from the All-Star break, they haven't done that. They've fallen flat on their face, but they are still very much in this race, and not like just they're kind of in it. Like, no, they're right in the thick of this race and like very much have a good chance at securing a playoff spot if they play good baseball. How can we ensure that this team plays good baseball? Fill the holes. Get a reliever. Get a starting pitcher. Get a right-handed bat. That's how you ensure. But to get there, you got to do it. And the deadline's coming up, and that is what we're here to talk about today. And fellas, we talked so much yesterday about the Alex Cora extension and the Rockies series and the upcoming Yankees series. We really didn't spend very much time on Craig Breslow declaring that the Red Sox are going to be buyers. Alex Spear had a really great piece with all the quotes. So initial thoughts, I mean, for me, it's like it's almost a little bit anticlimactic because the last couple of years we just like didn't know until the actual deadline passed what their path was going to be. And now it's a little bit weird to me actually knowing it several days in advance.
I can't, man. You guys are going to roll your eyes at me. I can't buy it. I have to see it. I have to see them buy. I'm glad that Craig Breslow said that, but after what we've been through the last 3 years as Red Sox fans, being told one thing and seeing the other, I need to see it. I cannot get hurt again. It's painful. Again, glad he said it. Need to see it.
So one thing that he did say, he didn't completely rule out trading rentals, specifically Jansen, O'Neill, and Pivetta. So he didn't rule it out, But he said that the price just keeps getting higher for them as they continue to get deeper into the season and stay in this race. So, Sammy, I think when you hear this, are you like when you give pause, because you're definitely wait and see. You got to see it to believe it. Are you afraid that a buy sell could be coming, or are you still afraid that they could all out sell?
I don't think they're going to all out sell. That just doesn't make sense.
Afraid that they're not going to not add?
No, I think they'll add. I guess my fear is the buy sell. I don't really like the buy sell. I think Tampa Bay is like the only team that does it. And to reference a successful buy sell, you got to go back 20 years, unless I'm forgetting a big one. And that's the Nomar Garcia Parra trade, where the Red Sox got rid of Nomar and then they brought in pieces, won the World Series. Great. But that's a long time. That was a long time ago. So I don't like the buy sell. I think you pick a lane. I think most of the time leaning towards sell is the safer play. But when you're a team like the Red Sox, where you're on the cusp of being a contender, you're a young team, you have kicked them in the nuts the past three off seasons where you just haven't really done that much. I think you got to buy. You got to buy and you got to be smart about it. I wouldn't go crazy. I'm going to present a trade later this episode. I think people are going to be so on it, but I think that's the way the Red Sox should go. Make modest additions that help the 2024 team. Don't mortgage the future. I think that's more than doable.
Well, Joe, do you believe they're buying, Joe? Like, are you on board? Do you think it's happening?
I firmly believe that they are going to buy. I think the beauty of it is that this is Craig Breslow talking. This is not Sam Kennedy. This is not Chaim Bloom from last year or 2 years ago. I know that people want to compare Bloom and Breslow, obviously, because they're the last two GMs. But Breslow has been in the dugout. He's been in the locker room. He's been on both sides of the coin where they've had good teams that don't invest. And he's basically been on teams that have picked a direction and have picked a lane. And he knows it better than anyone else because he's actually been it. He's lived it. So I love that Chaim Bloom came out days before the deadline. And that is more reassuring because this at least assures us who follow the Sox that there's going to be some kind of direction, at least from what he's telling us.
Yeah, and when I hear about direction, I mean, obviously we've never seen Breslow operate a trade deadline. Like, he says that they're going to pick a lane, and to me, when he says that they have picked this lane, I think he means that he is going to improve the team. But there's a reason that he's not ruling out trading some of the rentals that they have, because if they get overwhelmed with an offer, they'll do it. If the right situation comes, they'll do it. They're not gonna trade Nick Pivetta and then leave the rotation a guy short. They're not gonna trade Kenley Jansen and leave themselves bare in the bullpen. But like, and Jeff Passan also he wrote that he has heard that the Red Sox maybe trying to thread the needle a little bit. So maybe what Craig Breslow is saying is not exact, or maybe what he is thinking is not exactly how it sounds when it comes out of his mouth. But a potential like buy sell scenario, it's obviously difficult to do, but if you commit to making the priority improving the team, it can be done. And the only way that I would like, because I think trading Kenley Jansen has to be completely off the table. Their bullpen is way too beat up. There is just way too bare. You just can't do it at this point. And they have so few right-handed bats that you can't trade Tyler O'Neill. There is no way that it would be impossible to trade Tyler O'Neill and leave yourself better against left-handed pitching than you currently are. The only way I could see them potentially doing the buy-sell is with Nick Pivetta. And it still feels so impossible to do that I just don't think it's going to happen. But the only way I could see it is if they like traded for James Paxton soon and he was just DFA'd by the Dodgers, and multiple people have been reporting that there is interest there. John Heyman says that he basically almost said that he expects Paxton to go to Boston. So we'll see if that happens. But if you acquire James Paxton and you have a few days to go before the trade deadline, and you've basically now got a rotation of five guys and Cooper Criswell as your depth guy, if a trade comes into the line of sight where you can acquire a controllable starting pitcher, whether it be someone who is young with several years of control, like obviously we talked about the Mariners guys, and like obviously that's probably not going to happen, but like if it's one of those guys, or if it's a more realistic scenario and it's Jameson Taillon, and you make that trade. And now you've got an extra starter to deal from. It would probably make sense for that starter to be Nick Pivetta, the rental. So in that scenario, your team gets a lot better, and the prospects that you trade for Taillon are and Paxton are offset by the from the return you're getting for Pivetta. It almost like it still doesn't quite make a ton of sense in my mind, especially with Pivetta being like a real leader on the team. But I'm just saying, like, that might be the only scenario where I see them doing a buy sell, unless like a freaking Willier Abreu for real controllable stud starting pitcher trade comes about, which I don't foresee, especially in the middle of the season. But that those might be the only scenarios where buy sell could actually be semi acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, I think this market with the new playoff format, how a lot more teams are competitive, you could say, I think that makes it a little more difficult to make trades at the deadline. So I think the concept of what you're saying makes sense. I just think the chances of that many trades happening, that many trades working out for one team, the Red Sox, that's pretty unlikely. But I do agree, if they do find themselves in a situation where they could move Pivetta and not take away from the rotation, like add Paxton and then another guy, sure. Unlikely. And I would add that the other scenario that I'd be okay with them quote unquote selling is if you got like a Josh Fields for Yordan Alvarez kind of deal, or our oldest Chapman for Cole Reagans. Like if some team comes and they have some absurd prospect that they're willing to offer you, I get that. Like I get it. If you're going to get a guy who's going to be a superstar for years, sure. But again, super, super uncommon, super, super unlikely. I would prefer if they just made modest additions. Focus on the 2024 team, and you already are set for the future. You got a ton of young talent in the pipeline coming up, and they're starting to reach the high minors now. I'm hoping not a ton happens at the trade deadline, just small little additions here and there.
Yeah, and that's one thing, Sam, you talked about these prospects making it to the upper minors, and a lot of those are middle infielders, and even the ones they have middle infielders at the big league level. They've got middle infielders in AAA and AA, and pretty much every level the system has legitimate middle infield bats, and certainly left-handed bats. So yeah. Breslow talked, and he's been pretty open about how they need to kind of even out the amount of pitching depth to maybe not necessarily catch all the way up, because I don't know if that's ever going to be possible to catch it up to the bats, but he wants to even out the organization. And you know, you got a big surplus, and we've talked about the middle infield bats over and over and over on this show. But I think Breslow realizes that there's a lot of guys that are going to be blocked, and you know, maybe that's a guy who's as good as Nick York, but like you've got other guys like Chase Mydroth who's blocked. Emmanuel Valdez is blocked.
I mean, dude, York today as we're recording, York is starting in left field for the fourth game in a row. That's how blocked these guys are. They're just moving him to different positions. Now, part of that might be boosting his trade value, but the point remains, like, there's some big log jams, and this is not a bad thing. This is a good problem to have for an organization. Too much talent is never bad. So yeah, it's going to be interesting, man. I think there's going to have to be some moves. Just I'm hoping nothing too crazy. I'd rather save the crazy big moves for the offseason when you got a full campaign to let those work themselves out.
Yeah. I've never been opposed to the whole adding rentals thing. Like, I know that they definitely want, like, their priority is to find the next arm that's going to carry you through years to come, but I just find it hard to get one of those guys in the middle of the season, especially when a lot of them are hurt. Like, we talked about Lizardo all offseason, like Jesus Lizardo, and he's not healthy and he's not going to get dealt. So
yeah, and then they signed Giolito because he's the picture of health and durability, and he gets hurt. So it's just like, it's a total crapshoot with pitchers. That's why, like, people complain about the Red Sox farm system. Like, oh, you got to get pitching in there. You got to get pitching. And I agree, it would be nice to have some pitching, but I feel like 9 out of 10 times I'm going with the position player. Just the injury risk is so much lower nowadays with the focus on velocity, and these kids who are playing only baseball from their childhood and throwing so much more than, you know, 10, 15 years ago. So yeah, I'm very, very nervous when it comes to which young pitchers the Red Sox add, but at some point, it's a necessary risk.
Yeah, and they can kick the can down the road, maybe another year or even two on it if they want. And honestly, it might even benefit them to do it. Like right now, I mean, we just said it, like getting a rental
drafting
is
pitching?
Not drafting. I'm saying like making, sorry, I meant like turning around and trading some of these guys for an established pitcher.
Oh, yeah, like the big, big move. And we're not talking about like adding Like what's it, like Tyler O'Neill, where that's an impactful move, but it's not like trading Yoan Moncada and Michael Kopech for Chris Sale. We're talking about that kind of holy F kind like of trade
a,
where you
like a guy with
you
control.
Look at your phone, you're shocked. Yeah. Yeah, a guy with control too.
Right. And like and maybe that guy in the future is a guy like maybe we're not super, super high on, but then at the you get him in the Bailey lab, you get him in the Willard lab, and all of a sudden he's that dude that they've needed and we just didn't know it. But that trade will come. But for now, like I am more than okay if they just acquire basically a five starter to get them through the year. Like really, it's so much about eating innings and getting to the finish line, like literally getting to the finish line with the starting pitcher. And that's why like a guy like James Paxton who gets DFA'd is not bad in my eyes. Like, is James Paxton going to light the world on fire? No, he's not. He has not been the same pitcher this year as he was last year for the Red Sox. So if the Red Sox go out and get a James Paxton and you expect him to be that, you're probably going to be disappointed. But we did just see him face the Red Sox. He was good in that particular game. He's had a fine season. He's okay. He has been healthy and he can eat innings and keep you in games. And that's basically all I want from a starting pitcher. He was DFA'd. I know there's going to be a market for him. So it's not like you're just going to put a claim in for him and get him for free. You will have to give something up, but I don't think it's going to be anything substantial. So I think he might, I don't want to call him the perfect fit because injury risks, like I want a guy who I know can be healthy, but yeah, he's a guy who I feel confident can eat six innings in a given start. So I don't know. Are you guys in on the whole Paxton thing?
I like Paxton. I like Paxton. He would be a good modest addition, but I think a couple of weeks ago, I think it was Sammy, you said that you can make that move for Paxton, but it can't be the move you make for James Paxton. There's got to be more supplemented on that. So it can't just be – your deadline can't just be Paxton added to the rotation. You need a bat. You need a reliever. You might even need to get another arm in the rotation. So you go and get a Jameson Taillon as well. But – like you said, Gordo, he eats innings. Plus, he gives the rotation some versatility because they're all righties. Paxton comes in as a lefty. So I really do think that helps. And I think Paxton is just someone that can nurse this team, the bullpen and the rotation, to the finish line.
Sam, are you in on Pax?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fit is okay. I don't think it's a great fit, honestly. He is a starting pitcher, which is a need. We all know that. But they need innings, and this guy, like I said, I just talked about how pitchers get hurt, but I think there's different degrees of risk with different guys. James Paxton is in his mid-30s and has a rich, rich history of injury issues. So, good pitcher. I like him. I like that he's left-handed, Joe. That's a good point. Brings some diversity to the rotation, which is all right-handed now. I would be fine if the Red Sox added him. But he's not my preference. I don't think he's close to the top of the list of guys I would want. But again, I would totally understand. I think the fit it's okay.
It's like he's not the best pitcher they could get. He's not close to the best pitcher they could get. But in terms of getting a quality guy for like a more than reasonable price, I feel like that, like he might be the best value they could get. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's the best move that they could make. Like if they could get a controllable dude, or if they wanted to aim, you know, at the top of the market and they wanted to go like for a Jack Flaherty, like, yeah, there's better guys that they could get that would give them a better chance of making the playoffs than James Paxton would. But if you want to fill, like, here's the issue is the Red Sox now have a need for a relief pitcher. And as Bradford reported, they're looking for a swing and miss left-handed reliever. So if you're going to get a legitimate swing and miss left-handed reliever, a right-handed bat, and a starting pitcher, like you're not going to be able to aim at the top of the market for all three of those. Paxton can get the job done and eat innings for you. Like if that allows you to spend a little bit more in terms of prospect capital in other areas, like, yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. But swing and miss left-handed reliever, that's an interesting... that's an interesting place to look. And Sammy, your who says no, it involves a left-handed reliever. So I kind of want to just give this to you and let you hit us.
Yes, it does involve a left-handed reliever. And I would challenge anybody to find a person who looks more like a relief pitcher than this guy. Just you wait. I'll give you the entire trade. My who says no is between the Boston Red Sox and the Detroit Tigers. The Red Sox in this deal are acquiring infielder Andy Ibanez and left-handed swing and miss relief pitcher Andrew Chafin. Two Andes coming to Boston. Andrew Chafin, heavy set fellow, big handlebar mustache, disgusting mullet, probably very sweaty. Nobody has ever looked more like a relief pitcher than this guy. I love it. He has the best aesthetic you'll ever see on a baseball field. Headed to the Tigers from the Red Sox. This guy's been mentioned in a lot of trade packages, a lot of hypothetical trades, and for good reason. Number 12 prospect Nick York, who has been crushing it in AAA. His trade value, I would say, is the highest it's ever been. But as we spoke about earlier, he is blocked. He is blocked at second base big time by multiple guys that he's been playing left field to just increase his versatility, make him a more valuable player, whether it's for the Red Sox or in a trade. In this scenario, I have him going to the Tigers, along with Ryan Zephyrjohn. I believe this is who the Tigers would want to replace Andrew Chafin's depth on the roster. He is close to MLB ready. He's in AAA right now. The ERA doesn't look great, but this guy throws gas. He's almost definitely going to have a major league career. So you're swapping relievers, the older guy who's ready now to Boston, younger guy who will be ready soon to a young Detroit Tigers team. Here's the logic behind the trade. We talk all the time about what the Red Sox need at this coming trade deadline in 2024. They need a right-handed bat. Andy Ibanez has an OPS of 1,033 against left-handers this year, and he's been good against them for most of his career. He plays first base, second base, and third base, and he's a very good defender. So that's perfect for an Alex Cora team. That's what you want to see. He's 31 years old, so a young team like Detroit probably is not going to be too attached to him. 31-year-old utility guy. Sometimes he starts, sometimes he comes off the bench. I could see them moving him. He's ARB1 eligible in 2025, so he might come back to the Red Sox if they want to make him an offer. Multiple different ways that can go. He's currently making under $1 million, by the way, so it's not going to be a money problem. As for Chafin, veteran left-handed pitcher, he's been in the league for a long time. 44 strikeouts in 33.2 innings, so there's that swing and miss lefty that the Red Sox want. He's got a 3.48 ERA, which is okay, but the FIP is 2.63, so he's kind of been let down by his defense a bit. And here's the kicker. He's making $4.2 million in 2024, which is pretty reasonable for a guy like him, and he has a club option for 2025 at $6.5 million. So if the Red Sox like what they see and they're willing to give him $6.5 million, it's a little bit high for a reliever, but if they like it, they can take it. If not, they can move on. Here's why Detroit might be interested. They're getting Nick York. He's close to MLB ready. He is destroying AAA pitching, putting up good numbers. He plays multiple positions now. He used to get knocked for his defense at second base, but that's come a long way. He's not a plus defender, but he's an average defender at second. Not too sure the left field defense is looking right now. I assume it's a work in progress, but the fact that he's getting reps there is a good thing. And then Zephyrjohn, like I mentioned, electric arm, sits 96, 98. Probably an MLB arm. He might even come up in 2024. Kind of unlikely, but there's a chance. Just kind of puts it in perspective how close he is. So yeah, that's the trade. Red Sox get Andy Ibanez and Andrew Chafin. That's a 31-year-old utility guy, crushes lefties, and a left-handed reliever who gets strikeouts. Headed to the Tigers, Nick York, 12th-ranked prospect, and Ryan Zephyrjohn, 37th-ranked prospect. Who says no?
I have never seen a guy with more drastic platoon splits than this. This is crazy.
He's got big, big, big splits. He kills lefties and then can't hit righties, but that's what they need.
Andy Ibanez, the difference between his OPS versus lefties and OPS versus righties is a major league hitter. Like, his OPS against lefties this year, 1033. His OPS against righties, 380.
1033 OPS is like Aaron Judge. Like, that's elite, elite, elite. Like, that's unbelievably good.
This is so tough, Sammy, which makes it a good one, to be honest with you. It's just that if I'm it's a trade that I would make if they struck out on other guys. Like, if I'm trading Nick York, I like to think that I'm getting a guy who I know will hit lefties, but I can also, if needed, and maybe will want to play against some righties. Like, if they got like a Jonathan India type, and obviously the Reds wouldn't be the greatest fit for Nick York, but I'm just saying, like, if they got a Jonathan India or if they got a Luis Renjifo, and like, that was my who says no was Nick York for him. Like, if those can't come to fruition, Like, would I deal Nick York for Andy Ibañez rather than not making a move for a right-handed bat? I would, just because Nick York is depth. He is blocked. He's a good player and deserves an opportunity, and he would get that in Detroit. But it wouldn't be my first choice. So I don't want to say I say no. I don't think I think the Tigers definitely don't say no. So I don't know. It might be a go. It might be a go. Either the Red Sox say no or it's a go.
I mean, for me, I could see both sides of it. I mean, the numbers you listed on Ibañez, I could see it. I think there are better options, at least for a bat. I like Chafin. I like what you were saying about Chafin, a lefty. As you said, he looks like he could play in the 1970s or the 1980s for the Detroit Tigers, him and my buddy Mark Fittich. I do think York, at least for this kind of move, kind of what Gordo was saying is he might be too valuable of an asset to sort of give up for someone you're hoping could hit well like Ibañez and can, as a lefty, produce those swing and misses like Chafin. Ibañez doesn't provide the certainty, at least for me, for a bat. But if you ask me, like, you know, in a 50-50 world, like percentage-wise, I would probably say like a 52-48, I would make the deal. So I do like it. So I don't say no to that one.
Here's the other thing. Is
if it helps,
the deal
with, go ahead.
Another like Ibañez is controllable through 2028. So you get him the rest of this year, 25, 26, 27. So he's got tons of control. But I don't know exactly how valuable that is to the Sox, who have their middle infield of the future coming, and they've got David Hamilton who can play, and he's probably going to be your bench middle infielder. So it's like, I don't know how valuable the extra years of control are to me. That's the other thing.
If it helps, he's 89th percentile outs above average. So he's playing really good defense, and he's kind of been in that range his entire career.
What positions he's been playing this year?
First base, second base, third base, and I believe he's even played some outfield. That's another kind of kicker with Ibañez, is like, you're getting pretty damn good defense at a position at second base where defense has been pretty bad universally with the Red Sox. Hamilton's been okay, but you have Emmanuel Valdez there, who's not a good defender. Vaughn Grissom, who's kind of still learning the position. And then
Jamie Westbrook,
not a great defender. So, I mean, he could also be a guy who comes in late in the game as a defensive replacement. He's got decent wheels too, like 60th percentile. So he's not going to slow you down on the bases. He's got, you know, he can run a bit. And then, yeah, I think Chafin, just like, the bullpen's good. I think veteran bullpens are, that's the move. I like older guys in the pen because they're fungible and you don't have to you don't have to get attached to them. And I just feel with a young team like this, if the bullpen was veteran, I just like that dynamic a bit.
I feel like it might be the opposite. Are you
seeing, what kind of scenario are you seeing Chafin in? Let's say he does come and joins the bullpen. What kind of situations are you putting? Are you replacing him like in the Bernardino role, or is he a setup guy? Like, so where is he in the role?
I think you have, in this scenario, you have two setup guys. So you can go, obviously, Kenley is closing. Then you have Chafin, and hopefully you have Liam Hendricks. And those are your one inning setup guys. Then you have Slayton, Zach Kelly, Bernardino, Boozer, who can all go multiple innings at any time. You also have other options like Weissert. Horn has been up and down from the little bit we've seen him. I'm probably forgetting people. But yeah, I mean, just the depth it adds to your bullpen. You'd have one of the better bullpens in Major League Baseball at that point. If Hendricks comes back as well, like, good luck in the late innings. It just gets tougher and tougher.
This is the other part of the trade. And like, I like Chafin, but just like knowing what we know about the Red Sox, don't you feel like they're going to, and like, this isn't necessarily a bad thing, but doesn't it feel like they're going to try to like go after, and like you've brought up this name a couple of times is Nardi from the Marlins, is go after a guy who has upside and control and is cheap. Because
I could see that. That was actually, I was going to do Nardi. That was my other choice that I was going to do, but I figured I already mentioned him like two times on, right, once on the podcast, once on Twitter. So I wanted to switch it up. But Nardi, yeah, he's a big left-hander, bad cheap surface numbers. Yeah. Well, see, I don't know if he's going to be cheap. That's the problem.
No. I'm talking about money. I'm talking about just money.
Oh, money? Yeah.
Like he's not making it. Yeah, no, you'd probably have to give. I mean, I know he's not
probably like York. You'd probably have to give up like Nick York for that because they probably see him as a future closer. He's 25. He throws absolute Ched. I know he's got a 5 ERA, but like, yeah, see that's, I don't know. I think it's going to cost a lot for Nardi.
Because hold on, that's the trade we have to look for. I forget the guy's name. Who was the Cubs reliever that the Yankees traded for a couple years ago? And now we got Tommy
Efros.
Scott Efros. He's really good, and they didn't give up a Nick York caliber prospect. They gave up like their maybe I think 17th or 18th ranked prospect at the time, and they didn't have as good a system at the time as the Red Sox do right now. So like, I don't know, like Blaze Jordan changed. And something.
Markets are changing though. Like I said, trades are tougher to make happen nowadays. I think you have to. I think now more than ever with prospects, you have to overpay because people are so hyper-focused on prospects. Everyone's so aware of how hit or miss these guys can be. Like Nick York could come up to Major League Baseball and stink. And I don't think anyone would be shocked. I think I'd be a little bit like, well, I thought he'd be good, but not super surprised. Like that's just how it goes with these guys. Reed Detmers is a guy we've talked about a lot. I know it's a pitcher, so it's not a perfect example, but this is a guy who was Detmers. Top prospect for years, and he's got a 6 ERA. So I think if you're only moving prospects, the only way to get major league talent is to overpay unless you're trading a guy like Marcelo Meyer, which they're just not going to do.
Yeah, no, they're not going to do that. I do think with relief pitching, I know that they're in the market for the swing and miss lefty, but I do think that their priority is going to be getting a guy that can get outs, and I think they are going to care about the return that they're giving. I think they're going to try to find a guy that they kind of think is undervalued and they can work with. Like that's the benefit of having this new pitching infrastructure, that you don't need to pay big bucks for a reliever financially and you can work with guys and fix them. I don't know. I'm just telling you how I think that they're going to operate. I'm not saying that I believe that they're going to be able to get a guy with a 5 ERA and fix him, snap your fingers, and he's going to be setting up for you in August. I think it's much easier to do that when you have the off season, but I just think that that's going to be what they're thinking.
Be so much easier if Nardi was not on a team like the Marlins, like a cheap team like the Marlins that really would value him as a guy that they could, like if he were on the Mets would just be like, hey, he's got a 5 ERA, get rid of this guy, we just buy someone new, and then the Red Sox would reap the benefits. So I get the concept. I don't know if Nardi's the guy that they're going to get like uncovered value for. Also, 2023, Nardi was one of the best setup men in Major League Baseball. So it's not like he's never had success. He was nasty last year. Had a fantasy baseball loss because of him. I remember that. So shout out Will. I like the concept of what you're saying, like a guy who's undervalued. Just not sure it's Nardi, but I know that was just
easier said than done to find the right guy. And like it has to be a guy that's movable. Like,
that's Ibanez to me. The hitter version of that is Ibanez. Like I feel 90% of people probably have no clue who Andy Ibanez is. Then you look at his splits and you're like, oh my God, this guy eats lefties for lunch. And he picks it at three different positions. So
no, it's not a bad fit at all. It's not a bad fit at all. Versatile, hits lefties. Like obviously, you know, with the way they deploy like Rob Refsnyder, you would like to have a guy that can do a little bit of both and not have two guys that like you're literally only playing against lefties, but like especially for this year alone, like that's not a bad thing. Like that's only like a semi problem for you in 2025 and beyond, and you obviously have a full offseason to retool the roster to fit it for when your next crop of prospects come up. But I want to transition us into enough said. We're running up on time here. Does anyone? No, I'll go first. Just want to give a shout out to Sammy for you haven't won the tournament yet, but it doesn't matter if you win the tournament because you won the Ed Hands sub tournament to get into the full tournament of Red Sox Twitter personalities. So Sammy had to win like three rounds and beat like three separate Twitter accounts. Who did you beat? You just beat Robbie Hyde.
Yeah.
Who did you beat before that?
The iceberg guy.
No, there was one in between. The iceberg guy was the first one.
I thought it was no. I got a bye in the first round.
I thought there were four rounds. Didn't you? You beat three people. I thought.
Yeah. No. First round bye, and then I faced the iceberg guy, and then Robbie.
No, I thought it was first round bye, iceberg, someone, Robbie. But I can't think of it, so maybe you're right.
I don't think so.
Who the hell? Maybe I'm thinking because you're moving on to face Liam Fantasy.
I like how to like
whatever. Shout out to you. That's all. Thank it is. You. Shout Thank out you. To you.
I appreciate it. And shout out to Ed for doing that. That's a lot of work that he has to put in to make that tournament. And I like how we're getting people to vote for me by being like, if you don't vote for me, my opponent is going to like eat all the food in my house and then I'll have nothing to eat. Or they're going to dump hot water on me and it'll burn my skin.
Hey, that's on the voters for believing it.
Yeah, true.
And what so, shout out to Sammy. I'm going to look for the tweet. I'm going to look for the bracket to make sure I'm not messing this up. But you are you're in the full bracket, so that's what matters.
Vote for me. It's perfect timing with the presidential election impending. This is the warm up. You vote for Red Sox Twitter personality and then U.S. president, which are neck and neck positions.
You need a slogan like a good president.
Go Boston Red Sox.
Good enough for me. You got my vote.
Who wants second? Who wants second?
I'll go next.
I'll go. Okay, you go, Joe. You're gonna be
you guys, really just bad go at the exact same time, and we'll see.
We'll just talk. We can talk over each other for like 5 minutes.
No, you go. Mine is not Sox related. Staying though in the MLB. I don't know if you guys saw the situation with the Diamondbacks and the Royals earlier in the week. Bobby Witt Jr. was a single away from the cycle, and the Diamondbacks take the cheap route and decide to throw at him. And then you got Torrey Lovello after getting warned. He comes out, he argues, then he gets ejected. And he says post-game that why on earth would we be throwing at one of the rising stars in the MLB? And I got to tell you guys, that's like on the borderline of gamesmanship and just being straight up dirty. Like, yeah, I like this guy. He's the future. He's got a great career ahead of him, but we also didn't want him to get the cycle. So it's like, I don't know where you guys stand on that one. I'm trying to pick a lane. I'm sort of leaning on the side of that was just dirty from Arizona, and they should have at least given him the cycle or at least let him attempt it.
Was it a fastball? They hit him with a fastball?
I'm pretty sure it was a fastball that sort of got him in the like you normally intentionally drill a guy. Like on the
hit. Because I'm inclined to believe Torrey, because he's a good guy by all accounts. He's very, very well liked around Major League Baseball. Rob talks glowingly about him on baseball's his podcast.
Baseball's a boring manager of the year last year.
Yeah, huge, huge, huge. And I feel like he does understand what Bobby Witt Jr. means to the game. And I don't think Torrey Lovello would ever advocate for intentionally hitting him. Now, that doesn't mean that it was not intentional. Maybe the players took it into their own hands. There's no way. We don't know what goes on behind closed doors. But I believe what Torrey was saying completely. I just don't know if the players were on the same page.
I agree. I'm not blaming Torrey for any of it. I'm not blaming it at all. I'm just saying like the message, or I should say the actions, are kind of outweighing the message.
I like to see the good in people and hope that it's not on purpose. I just like naturally will believe that it wasn't on purpose, unless there's someone doing it to us, in which case it's always on purpose. But in that case, I'm going to choose to think that it wasn't on purpose, although I understand that maybe it was, but I'm going to believe the best, especially in Torrey Lovello. Love Torrey Lovello. Also, Sammy, you beat Fitzy. You beat Fitzy Mopeña. That was your second.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that that round was quick. That was like a quick round. Like it felt like it was quicker than the other rounds.
You wiped the floor with them or something?
No, that's why I said Fitzy would come into my apartment and eat all the cheese out of my refrigerator if I lose. So I wouldn't be able to make like a taco. So you have to vote for me.
Yeah, there you go.
Or else I won't eat. All right. Joe, you're going to be mad at me for this. So it's concert season at Fenway. I have never in my life heard of Kane Brown. And everyone was going nuts over him. Who the fuck is Kane Brown? I Googled him before this episode because I didn't know what to do for Nuff Said. I'm like, oh yeah, that guy. Like, what genre is that?
So I'm going to be straight up. I'm going to be honest with you, Sammy. I'll tell you this right now because I was at that concert because I was working it during the Sox.
You were so excited about it. That's why I brought it up because
Well, because I'm a country. I'm like a country music fan. I like his music. But as a performer on a stage, Kane Brown is not that good. I'll tell you that right now. Like he's got great music, but in terms of like a show, he relies on pyrotechnics and the fire from the stage and the moving stage. Like the way he started was he was on a separate stage that came down from the roof, but it was a lot of, you know, he's not a guy who just like is doing a bunch of dance break. He just sort of stands, moves around the stage and sings.
He's cool. So, he's cool.
Yeah.
He looks like if you took Steph Curry and crossed him with a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
No, he's Steph and Verdugo.
No, his face is too wide. I think he's got a wide face. That's why I said the turtle, because he's like his head is shaped like this.
Like I have Verdugo a light. Kind of looks like a turtle.
Like I got a light bulb head. He has a oval. He has like my head shape, but turned to the side. This is a good anatomy lesson. But yeah, everyone's talking. Dude, that's a turtle. And
dude, he looks like Doogie. He looks kind like of. Doogie.
No, I think that looks actually, like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle and Steph Curry.
It looks more like Doogie when he's smiling. So yeah, shout out. Kate Brown, I listen to country music too. He's like, he's one of those guys where it's like, I won't turn off his song. His songs, like, they're fine songs, but there's no song that he has where I'm like, oh my God, that's an absolute banger. Like, he just has a bunch of okay, which is fine.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, he's got good music, but as like an entertainer, like, to me was subpar, but I still like his music.
Okay, maybe I'll check him out. Yeah, everyone was so, it wasn't just you. I saw a bunch of my friends were at Kane Brown at Fenway and everyone's so excited. I felt that, see, this made me feel old. I'm like, man, is this one of those guys that those young kids like to listen to? But
he came right after Noah Kahan too. Like, it was two nights of Noah Kahan and then Saturday.
Yeah, I saw that. Like, Noah Kahan, sick. Looked like it was an awesome show. I kind of wish I could have gone to that. Other than the sweatshirt, the hoodie he was selling for $90. My God. Yeah, man, Kane Brown. Never. Not that I have never listened to the music. I had not even heard of him.
Well, that was me last year. Coincidentally, with Noah Kahan. Remember, it was like October. I didn't know who Noah Kahan was.
That's crazy. That's crazy though. He's a New England guy. He's huge. He's the Grammys and like is like that. That's crazy.
I've known who Kane Brown is for years. I didn't know who Noah Kahan was until like 9 months ago.
Kane Brown is older than I am. That makes me feel good. So
wow.
And then on top of that, the concert series continued this week with Blink 182.
Was there someone playing at Fenway during the day on Tuesday?
Like, what, not what during the day, but
I heard shit coming from Fenway Park during the day.
They had an opener at like it could have been like a sound check or whatever.
It's like 2 o'clock. Maybe it was a sound check. That could, but we'll have to figure it out.
Do people do the one more song thing at country shows? I've never been to a country show. Do they do so like when
not,
the guy goes
not
off?
One more song. They don't chant one more song like they do.
It's implied.
But yeah, like all the cheering of like woo, like they just keep cheering and cheering. And
they'll leave and come back because like if you don't leave and come back, people think they're short. They're getting shortchanged.
And they turn on all the lights. They turn on all the lights when like seconds after when it's over.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
They kind of know like the encore.
So he's like, I'm gonna come out. I'll give y'all one more. I can't do a country.
He did not have. I'll tell you that.
Is he Southern?
No, that's not what he sounds like.
That.
He does not sound like that.
He does not speak like that.
He's from Chattanooga.
Dude, this guy plays in like every celebrity NBA basketball game at All-Star Weekend. He is in every
country
one of
the music.
Andy was in the softball celebrity game. He hit a
homer.
Dude,
yeah, this guy loves the All-Star games. You gotta come on, Sammy.
I don't watch many All-Star games.
Okay. He's okay. He's okay. He's okay.
What is he like?
He doesn't have the stereotypical drawl. No.
Hey, how you doing? I like country music. Yeah.
No, that's not Kane. No. That's not Kane Brown. Listen to a couple
of
his songs. Listen to a couple of his songs and you'll get the voice down. It's not something that I don't know. You're good at imitations, so maybe I couldn't. I like thought it, I was like, oh, do I like try to like sing a couple of his songs? And I just like
Can you sing on the show? It would be the second time you've done it.
I'll sing on the show but I can't imitate Kane Brown. Like it wouldn't come off.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. I guess I'll Google it.
Yeah. Thanks for tuning in to episode 103 of Play Tessie. We appreciate you tuning in. Before you go, what a girl about your day. Remember, hit that subscribe button. We really appreciate when you guys do that. Rate us 5 stars wherever you're listening. Odyssey, Apple, Spotify, wherever. Check us out on YouTube, on the WBI channel. We've got a Play Tessie playlist there. You can hit the thumbs up on those videos. We really appreciate it. Find us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. For Sammy, for Joe, it's Gordo here. Trade deadline is coming up. Sox Yankees series, big series here. Got to keep making up ground on the Yankees. Got to get back on the right track. We will see it starting tonight on Friday night. But till next time, we appreciate you guys tuning in to Play Tessie. Peace.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.